Welcome to Ruby Rider's Pegging Paradise podcast number 130 on March 28th, 2016. Changing the world one ass at a time. So hey everybody, let's talk about bathrooms. Let's talk about North Carolina. Let's talk about the bullshit that's happening over there. I just want to run through this pretty quickly because I had a very entertaining time yesterday. So first of all, for those who aren't in the know and haven't been watching the news, North Carolina back in February passed this lovely anti-discrimination law, and it did include regarding bathrooms and things, and a lot of states have passed these, and it's just to protect the rights of trans people in bathrooms and things. So what the conservative contingent ended up doing, those people intent on discriminating since they lost the gay marriage fight, they called a special session and rammed through, not in a good way, because goodness knows ramming through can be really fun sometimes, but not in a good way at all. They rammed through a bill that stripped those rights and basically required a person, now think hard about this, required a trans person to use the bathroom that matches the gender that is on their birth certificate. Now, it's a fact, actually, that trans women experience much more violence and harassment than trans men do, and this would place trans women in a situation of going into the men's bathroom to use the bathroom, which is pretty fucked up. So, what I did was I did a little research on the bill, and I checked out who the sponsors of this bill were. And there are some primary sponsors and then a bunch of other people that signed it as well as sponsors. And I put their Facebook pages, the links to that, up on my Facebook page and encouraged all my lovely friends in sex educator and sex positive communities to go to these people's Facebook pages and tell them what they thought. I thought that that would be a really good thing for them to know what other people think that aren't in their little conservative bubble world. So, this bill is referred to as North Carolina HB2 or House Bill 2. The representatives who were the primary sponsors were Dan Bishop, Paul Stamm, Julia Howard, and Bob Steinberg. So, I put up their Facebook pages. Really, the only person that bit, the only person that took the bait, when I posted things on their Facebook page, is our lovely representative, Bob Steinberg. He did all kinds of things. He called me a clueless liberal from California. He said that I didn't read the bill. And we had a fun back and forth. I encouraged my friends to join in, and they did. And we had some fun times. One of the things that he kept saying was, if this was to protect his wife and daughter and everybody's wife and daughter, like everybody has a wife and daughter, right? From those trans predators. And he never said trans predators. He basically said, to protect them. Well, okay, if you do a little research on the internet, you will find that the myth, and it is absolutely a myth, of trans predators has been debunked many times. There is, let's see, I believe it's on the website Media Matters. There's a whole list of people in the know who have done research on what's happened in states who have passed the anti-discrimination law and had trans people using their correctly gender-identified bathroom, right? And there's been no problem at all. Also, that I know of, there is not one instance of a trans predator in a bathroom. And I love one of the things I saw up on Facebook, which was perhaps it's time to remind these people that more senators have been arrested for misconduct in bathrooms, hello, Larry Craig, than trans people. Buck Angel got onto the mix, not on Bob Steinberg's Facebook page, but he made this beautiful picture of himself in all of his masculine, hairy, tribal tattooed, muscular glory, smoking a cigar and looking pretty hardcore. And it says, coming soon to a restroom near you. And then at the bottom, it says, hashtag gender neutral bathrooms. So I posted that on Bob Steinberg's comment thread and said, don't you realize that this is what you're inviting into the bathroom where your wife and daughter go to the restroom, right? And he says, nice try, Ruby. And I said, no, literally, this is a fact. This is a very famous trans man, and he's a friend of mine. So yes, we had a really good time with that. He took it down really fast, but I did take a screenshot of it and saved it. So yes, I had a lot of fun. So one of the people that joined in on this fun was Heather Woodford. So Heather is a counselor. She has a master's in social work at an agency called the Gender Health Center, and I believe that's in Sacramento. And she told me that that's where she got her professional experience of working with trans folk. So she gets the award for the best comment. And the reason I say she gets the award is not because, I mean, sometimes it's really fun to kind of poke at these people because it's so ridiculous. But really, what's the good thing to do? It's not just a diplomatic thing to do. It's the smart thing to do, is to calmly try and educate people. Now, I would bet dollars to donuts that Bob Steinberg continues to hold these views until the rest of his life is over. But perhaps a reader will see this and really start to think. So here is what Heather wrote. Actually, in California, transgender people can access both physical and mental health care much more readily than in most other states, meaning they are much less likely to attempt suicide and suffer depression alone. In ensuring these rights for trans folk, we have actually made them more accessible for the general population. A rising tide lifts all boats. If you really care about the well-being of your populace, consider helping folk access the health care they deserve instead of forcing them to use restrooms that don't align with their gender identity. Did you know that the vast majority of transgender people have experienced harassment and many also experience violence just for trying to use the restroom? Did you know that these kinds of experiences are the type of thing that lead people over time to experience increased physician and mental health issues? Did you know that there is no evidence that actual transgender people are causing problems in public restrooms? They just want to pee, like literally every other human being. I am just asking you for one moment to put yourself in someone else's shoes. Imagine if you could not safely use a public restroom, a basic service. Imagine if you had to choose between violating a discriminatory law and being yelled at or harassed or beat up. Go ahead, think about it. What kind of choice would that be? So yay, Heather. I totally applaud you. Education really is the best, because the more we talk about exactly what that's like for the trans person, then the more people might finally change their minds, might understand that little glimmer of hope that if we spread the word enough, as opposed to just fighting with people. Yeah, I admit, I got on there to fight with the guy. I didn't really give him a whole lot of... I didn't diplomatically give him a whole lot of good information. I kind of threw it at him, and he threw things back. And then he went to Easter service, and he kept peppering all of his comments with, "He is risen." That's fine. Whatever people want to believe is fine. But I'm sure that he believes that his God thinks that what he did is right. And wow, whatever God is out there, I don't think this is what he or she had in mind, is all I'm going to say about it. So, anyway, that anti-discrimination bill was passed in February, that initial one, and then on Wednesday the 23rd, I believe, they rammed through this other one, and the governor signed it really quick. And there's a really interesting read on the whole thing. It's a timeline, and it's a live blogging thing. It was done by, I'm going to put the links in the Linkorama, it's called IndieWeek.com. And Jane Porter is the one who live blogged it. And she definitely is live blogging it with a liberal slant, which is probably why I enjoyed it so much. But it was also really educational to see how this all happened. It wasn't as if nobody was there speaking against the bill. There were a whole bunch of people there speaking against the bill. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons that I am, as they say, a card-carrying member of the ACLU was this little paragraph here, 11:19 a.m. Sarah Preston from ACLU is here. ACLU is, quote, very concerned, end quote, about this legislation. Charlotte's ordinance was a simple measure to protect all people in public places. And with that, Charlotte's ordinance is a reference to the initial bill that was passed in February that avoids discrimination. And then she goes on to say, a lot of people may not understand what it means to be transgender, but the reality is a transgender woman is a woman, a transgender man is a man, and they should be able to access the bathroom of their gender. people are already harassed and assaulted in public accommodation. We are going to add to that harassment and violence. We need to do better by this community. We must protect gender identity and sexual orientation. Protect all groups. Do not pick and choose. Oh, I love the ACLU. I really, really do. Go and give them some money if you have a little extra. So, I mentioned who were the main representatives that sponsored this bill. And of course, the governor I mentioned briefly, who signed the fucking bill into effect, is Pat McCrory. And then I'm just going to run through really fast here the last names of the representatives who were also listed as sponsors. Adams, Arp, Avila, Bradford, Brody, Burr, Cleveland, Dixon, Elmore, Hager, Hall, Hastings, Hurley, Jones, Jordan, Langdon, Martin, McElraft, McNeil, Mills, Moore, Pittman, Presnell, Riddell, Robinson, Schaefer, Special, Torbett, Warren, Watford, Whitmire, and Zachary. To all of you representatives in North Carolina, to all of you, and especially to Paul Stamm, Dan Bishop, Julia Howard, and Bob Steinberg, and the governor, Pat McCrory, I play you this song because you really need to hear it.
Free your ass, your mom will follow. Take it deep, now don't be shallow. Free your ass.
All right, moving on to some more fun stuff. Even though that song's always fun for me, and I am enjoying using it as punctuation. Okay, this comment was left on my Pegging 101 website, and it was on my post about wanting stories from the women. I am curious about this topic from a different angle. Men seem to really want this, but they pair it with this idea of women wanting to be a dominatrix. And I thought I had read somewhere from a very dominant woman that a guy getting pegged isn't exactly congruent with them being dominated by a woman, in the sense that the pegging is a reward, and the whole relationship between a dominant and a submissive party is that there is that pleasure of withholding a reward. I wish I could find that article again, but I'm curious about a discussion about it. I'm also happy to provide any of my own pegging experiences. Wow, that is an idea-rich and some assumptions-rich paragraph. Okay. One of the first things that I want to put out there is that in many circles, amongst many dominant women who have submissive male partners who they peg, is that pegging their submissive is seen as the ultimate surrender, or the ultimate submission is many times what they call it. So let me put that out there first, but let's take another look at how you phrased all of this. Men seem to really want to pair it with this idea of women wanting to be a dominatrix. I'm not so sure that they think women want to be a dominatrix. I think that this is how a fair number of men envision pegging. I think that a fair number of men do connect it with BDSM and I don't know whether this is because they've been watching the porn or because there's a submissive side of them they want to explore, and it really doesn't matter. But there is an overlap between dominance and submission and pegging in many men's minds. I find that women wanting to be a dominatrix is less true in terms of like the whole group of women who like pegging. Not all of them want to be the dominatrix. Some of them enjoy having the power and control, but it's not all about the BDSM porn type of thing. So now let's move on to, you stated that the whole relationship between a dominant and a submissive party is that there is that pleasure of withholding a reward. Well, dominance and submission is done in a whole bunch of different ways. It's almost as individual as the couple that you are talking with. For example, in my world, I am absolutely a dominant woman. Do I like withholding pleasure? Well, I enjoy edging, and edging is where you bring a man up to, could be a woman too, but I only play with men, so bring a man up to an orgasm and then stop, and bring him up to it and stop. And I always give him the orgasm in the end, if it's possible anyway, if this is an orgasm type of night for him. But I don't withhold it at the end and say, okay, we're done here, and take a lot of pleasure in him not getting any kind of reward. I am also a sadist, so there's another element in there. I enjoy inflicting pain that he enjoys, okay, and that's another part of it. But I really like giving pleasure, too, and one of the things I really enjoy is to cross those wires of pain and pleasure. You know, cause a bunch of pain and then cause some pleasure and really cross those wires until their whole body's kind of freaking out. I love doing that. To me, pegging isn't a reward. Or, you know, if I had to say if it was a reward, it's actually a reward for me. I love it. Well, clearly I love it, or I wouldn't be here doing this and doing this podcast and everything. But I am no more going to not peg my guy than, you know, not take him to bed. Forget it. Pegging is absolutely a part of my bedroom activities and my sexual activities. I don't look at it as a reward. However, see, I've explained all of this, and you could easily, I'm sure, find another dominant woman who says, oh yeah, he only gets pegged when he's been a really, really good boy, because that's the ultimate reward for him. So don't assume that we're all like that, but if what you're curious about is to hear from those women and men where that type of dynamic exists in a dominant-submissive relationship, where she's really not wanting to peg him because that she considers a reward, and he is always trying to be the good boy in the submissive sense in whatever other agreements they have and whatever else he's supposed to be doing so that he can get pegged. Yeah, I'm sure that there are couples out there like that. Absolutely. So in certain circumstances, I think that what you're saying is true. And I encourage anybody who's in a situation like that to write in and talk to us about it and tell us what it's like. I peg the guy for my reward. I fuck him because I want to, because it brings me a lot of pleasure. It happens to bring him a lot of pleasure too, and I love giving pleasure. But yeah, that's how I work it. So thank you very much for leaving that comment, because yeah, let's have a discussion about that if anybody's curious, interested, has anything to contribute. Okay, our next letter is an email. I'd like to update you on where we stand on our much-delayed foray into pegging. I must be one of the dumbest men on the planet. After my last correspondence with you, probably close to 2 years ago, we've yet to meet the requirement for you to play the music, and it's almost entirely my fault. And my fault, it is in capitals here. I spoke with my wife back at the time about my desire for her to peg me, and she has no problem at all with it. A lot of guys would love to be in my shoes, but I told her that I wanted her to listen to some of your podcasts, and I wanted to talk about it before we actually started to do it. I wanted to be ready. And I wanted her to understand from the information on the podcasts just why I was interested in being pegged. So basically, she's been waiting for me to come out and say, I'm ready, let's do it. And I've been kind of afraid of what she might think about me. Dumb, I know. Here's the really crazy part. We're no strangers to anal play. She loves anal sex. And because of that, she totally understands why I would like to experience what she feels and enjoys in that area. How cool is that? We've been married for 45 years and have had an extremely rich sex life together, with experiences in many areas of kink and eroticism. I'd venture to say that the average couple hasn't even heard of some of the things we've done and enjoyed. I can recall the first time I found myself in her ass. It must have been the late 70s. We had never talked about this subject, probably both thinking that we'd think the other one was weird for wanting to try anal sex, or that it was dirty. We were fooling around in the dark at our little up north getaway around our anniversary 1 year. We were spooning, and I had a nice erection going, pointing imprecisely between her cheeks, as if to take her from behind, vaginally, that is. I moved closer and started to press inward, and I felt a tighter opening than the one to which I was accustomed. I knew it meant that I was entering her ass. She knew I was entering her ass, too, but we played dumb. It was exciting to me, because it's a taboo and a different feeling. It was also exciting for her, because she had experimented with anal insertions on her own. She confided this to me as we talked about it afterward. When the excitement ebbed, she made a comment that I'd missed her pussy. I said, I know. And we both laughed and talked about this exciting new addition to our sexual repertoire. Sometime later, maybe a year or two, we were up there again for our anniversary. By this time, we had a video camera, and I liked to use it on occasion to tape her masturbating. As I have a voyeuristic streak in me, I'd watch from outside our cabin window and bring the camera in to continue taping whatever went on after I went back inside. On this particular occasion, she was wearing a horribly cheap strap-on with an anal probe connected by a ring that looped around the shaft of the dildo. She was wearing a filmy nightgown with her breasts exposed, looking into the camera while she stroked her cock, lifting up the anal probe to bring it to my attention, saying to me, "I'm gonna fuck your ass. Ooh, baby, yeah." Here's the weird thing. I don't know what put that in her mind. I don't remember talking about it with her, but the tape does go on to show her sticking the anal probe in me. It was easily 25, 30 years ago, so technically, I have been pegged. Sorta. But that brings us back to now. In the past week, I found out that two dear female friends have been diagnosed with breast cancer. It's very sad. And it reminded me that my wife and I are getting older, and serious diseases can strike at any time. I'd hate for something to happen to one of us before we had as much fun as we're capable of. Life's too short. I haven't taken my wife anally in quite some time. The last time we did it, it was uncomfortable for her, so I have mostly avoided it, despite the fact that we both enjoy it. But I asked her the other night if she was ready to try it again, and she was very ready. We cuddled and petted for a while, spooning. I was wearing a pair of thigh-top stockings with satin high-cut panties, and she reached into the waistband and fished out my stiffening member while I rubbed my legs against hers. She reached for the lube and distributed some on the entrance to her anus, then liberally rubbed some on me. Then we commenced to tighten up, and I felt my member slide slowly into her ass. She cooed and moaned and asked me to pinch her nipples harder. I take instructions well. As I slowly glided back and forth inside her, I whispered in her ear that I wanted her to do this to me, and she said, "I know you do." I continued, "I want you to make me suck your cock." She replied, "After you suck it, I'll lube it up and slide it into your ass and fuck you with it." Oh, Ruby, music to my ears. Then she said, "Fuck me like you want me to fuck you with my cock. Show me." What's a guy to do? It made me so hot that I couldn't hold off anymore, so I climaxed. She grabbed her magic wand and quickly buzzed to an intense, prolonged, body-shaking orgasm. It was wonderful, and we drifted off to sleep comfortably and contentedly, cuddling. My time's coming soon, Ruby. Get that music ready. P.S. Again, thank you for all you do for pegging, particularly the educational aspects that help overcome the fears and reluctance of those who are wont to give it a try. And he signs it, "All the best, the engineer." Now, for those of you who have been listening to the podcast for quite some time, I recall how he wrote in once and I said, wow, the way that this guy's describing this and the specificity with which he was describing whatever it was, I said, this guy's probably an engineer. And I totally nailed it. I mean, he wrote me later and said, yeah, you guessed it. I'm an engineer. So very nice to hear back from you, Mr. Engineer. But it sounds like things are going quite well and that you will soon be writing me with your story so I can play the music for you. So one of the things that this makes me think of is I have gotten a number of letters with this particular element of the men being afraid to bring it up again and thinking that their partners are going to think they're weird. This is a recurring theme over and over and over, and I've realized that one of the things that I really want to do is I want to go back to that podcast, which I thought that I had been really complete with, and make sure that I've addressed this particular subject well enough, because here's what I think. I think that the women who listen to podcast number 112 and get to the point where they are interested and they want to give it a try, they are open to it, right? Not the people that listen, not the women that listen and say, okay, this isn't my thing, because, you know, I hold space for everybody having their own personal reaction to it. And if you don't want to do it, you don't want to do it. That's fine. Pegging's not for everyone. But assuming that you do want to do it, to realize that your partner opened up to you and told you that he wanted this, and this is a critical time where it would be awesome if you can find a way through to taking the reins a bit, encouraging him, because I know I've talked about this before, but that is such an incredibly vulnerable space to put yourself in, to ask for this. Because in many circles, with the typical man thing, this is like turning in your man card, you know? This is how it's thought of, which is fucking ridiculous, and we all know that. Or we wouldn't be here, you know, with the podcast and you listening and me talking and everything. It's not that at all. But there's a lot of pressure from in the society, from other male friends, from people joking around, that counters him being really open with you about this. I mean, here's this guy, and practically, talk about the ideal responses in situations. Goodness, she's pretty much given you the ideal responses from the word go. And yet, Mr. Engineer, you were really reluctant to really go for it because you thought she would think you were weird. So, yeah, I'm going to encourage the women more, or make sure that I mentioned this in the podcast, to take the reins, to say, hey, you know, I know this is difficult for you, so I'm interested. You got me interested here. This sounds like a fun thing. Let's do this. Because even just that would be so helpful. What it sounds like to me, and I've heard this talked about before, is that it's kind of a paralyzing fear. And the only way that I can relate is it took me a long time to ask for what I wanted in bed, and I can understand, I can totally relate to that sort of paralyzing thing. It was so hard for me to ask what I wanted in the beginning that I remember like opening my mouth a whole bunch of times and nothing would come out, right? So it took me a while to get where I am now. And goodness, finding out that I was dominant sure helped that, because I'm expected to say exactly what I want. It's pretty awesome. But thank you for writing in, Mr. Engineer. Please do let us know when we can play the music. I'm going to check that podcast, see if I can alter it a little bit, or see if I have addressed that correctly enough. For all of you women listening, know that this is a real thing. Know that this is something that you need to pay attention to, is the vulnerability and the difficulty that are connected to him actually asking for what he wants in this area of his body and in this area of sexual play. And if you could take the reins and say, hey, you know, I'm in, dude, let's do this. It's okay. You're still a man. You're awesome. Let's do this. Let's play. Okay. Next letter. Email. My lube evolution began with an Aneros Helix and Astroglide water-based regular and gel. I was a happy guy with all my toys and jack-off sessions. I know you're shocked that a red-blooded male faps. So fapping, I've mentioned before, I think in my podcast, is another word for jerking off. F-A-P. This guy spelled it F-A-B, but I've never heard it called fabbing. I've always heard it called fapping. Anyway, next, I took your wonderful advice and graduated to Boy Butter, water-based. You have to love the name. And the product is so good and creamy. I tried Slickwood, your current favorite. Very nice. Well, then I discovered virgin coconut oil. I have used it on toys and for fapping, finding it works great, and my fully shaved cock and balls are super smooth. Now, I realize coconut oil doesn't last as long in some applications, but the low price makes up for it. It's all natural, so how bad can it be for you? Okay, please enlighten me. As always, feel free to use this on your podcast with customers and kinky friends. So, okay. Astroglide's horrendous. I'm glad you switched from that. It's got some bad shit in it. Boy Butter is an okay lube. Yes, it was a favorite for a while, and that's before I really upped my lube standards, if you will, and decided that it was very important, just because I didn't react to the lube, or most of my partners didn't, that if there was any men out there who might react to ingredients in lube, all it takes, if you've ever had this happen, I've had it happen once, and I think that was a big thing that changed my mind, is I had a guy who was allergic to the parabens that were in a lube that I used to use, which I'm not even going to name because I don't like it anymore. And boy, talk about a quick end to sexy times. Holy shit. It's like, oh my God, it's burning. And so then what do? Well, you can jump in the shower and sort of rinse it off with your finger and stick it in there and try and get it out. But no pegging is going to happen that night. It's just simply not going to happen. So yeah, that was a total bummer. And I found out that there are people who are allergic, and that is the symptoms to being allergic to these preservatives called parabens. So long story short, there's all kinds of ingredients. Tiffany at enticeme.com really helped me up my game on this, because she knows all of the specifics about what's not necessary and potentially harmful. So why not eliminate all of those things and just use a lube with none of the bad stuff and all the good stuff, right? And that would be Slickwood Silk. So that's why I changed to it. Some people really still love the Boy Butter, and yeah, I got to give it to him. It's an awesome name. But when I actually got the sheet, which I had to request, and he sent me a PDF, really you can't find it anywhere on their website, I was a little disappointed at what was in it. So, okay, let's move on to coconut oil. Coconut oil is fine as far as I know. It's an awesome lube. There's a whole bunch of people I know that use it. I have used it a little bit. The only thing that I don't like about coconut oil is that you really kind of be careful of protecting your bed and your sheets and things like that, because it stains. It definitely stains. And it's a little bit hard to wash out. Definitely harder than some of the other lubes. Definitely harder than liquid silk. But it's natural. It's awesome. I have no problem with it at all. Coconut oil is actually slightly antibacterial. So if it works for you, awesome. Use it. I know people that use it for regular sex all the time. I prefer to have something that's a little bit heftier in terms of like a gel or an emollient type of texture to it, as opposed to just oil. I think that that works better for anal, but yeah, nothing wrong with coconut oil at all. You will find people that talk about how there might be something wrong with it, but I believe those people were talking about the ability of coconut oil to block pores and create an anaerobic environment, and so it wouldn't be good for use in the vagina and blah, blah, blah. So do you know of anybody that has gotten infections in their vagina because they use coconut oil? I don't think so. So theoretically, that might be a problem, but proof is in the pudding. If you don't know of anybody it's ever happened to, and you can't find anything about it on the internet of people talking about it happening to them, I really doubt that that is an issue. Now, clearly, if you're allergic to coconut, whatever, then it's a problem. But I think coconut oil is a totally fine thing, and use it all you want. I would definitely recommend that you use organic virgin coconut oil, just to make sure that there's no icky stuff in there, you know, pesticides, whatever. That would be a good idea, but have fun with that coconut oil. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is, a while back, I did a podcast that had a lot of information about prostate checks, PSA tests, and things like that. I had a listener write in and talk about how he was going through the whole PSA high test results resulting in a biopsy experience, and he was interested in what I knew about it. So it must have taken me 2-3 days to really dive in as much as I wanted to, because I kept finding out more things and learning all about this whole situation. Well, one of the things, as you'll recall, is that a whole lot of prostatectomies, which is a removal of the prostate, are done when prostate cancer is found, despite the fact that it's really pretty unreliable as far as I am able to understand, because please understand I'm not a doctor, for them to differentiate whether it's an aggressive type of cancer or whether it is a slow-growing type of cancer. Nonetheless, when the decision is made to do the prostatectomy, that particular surgery results in quite a high level of complications. Erectile dysfunction is the very first one, which is very, very common. And the other one is urinary difficulties. So there's a new treatment for prostate cancer. And now I've heard people talking about this new cancer treatment in Europe that uses heat. That's the only thing I'd ever heard about it. And I heard about it quite some time ago. So this technique has been okayed by the FDA to treat prostate cancer, and it was okayed last fall in 2015. You know, they've been using this over in Europe for over 10 years, but leave it up to the FDA to have to do all of their own research and spend $250 million to okay it. So it's very slowly finding its way into our medical practices. There's not very many doctors that know how to do it. Tiffany was actually the one that sent me this news report, and there's a guy, a doctor named George Suarez, he's a urologist, and he is really a huge force behind pushing people to learn about this. In fact, he's training other doctors how to do it. And what this treatment is, it's called HIFU, H-I-F-U, means high frequency ultrasound. So this is a completely non-invasive procedure that gets in there and is able to target the exact cancer cell. So you are destroying the cancer, but you are not destroying the healthy tissue around it. So here's the thing that blows my mind, right? Dr. Suarez says that with HIFU, the chances of impotence are only 2% compared with 80% with traditional treatment, and only 1% for incontinence instead of 20%. So all you guys out there that are struggling with any kind of prostate issues, please shout this to the world. Please do research on the internet, HIFU, H-I-F-U, and spread the word, because this is something everybody needs to know about. So another thing that I just found when I was researching this on the internet is something that was put up March 11th, which is really recent. And it actually is one of the first studies of HIFU that has been done over 5 years, and it was done out of the UK. And the percentages of success rates are not quite matching, but it's worth a read because, I mean, there's a lot of different possibilities in terms of why the percentages don't match, but it's more information about this new treatment. So I'm going to put the link up for that as well. They were using HIFU treatment for low-risk, intermediate-risk, and high-risk patients. And I'm just going to read you the percent success rate. So they had their own specifications for what constituted not failing and surviving. It wasn't just like living. And those specifications are on this study, if you want to take a look at it. But basically, they had a survival rate after 5 years of the first HIFU, 87% for low-risk patients, 63% for intermediate, and 58% for high-risk patients. So yeah, this is looking pretty good. I'm going to put that link up there for you guys to take a look at it, because there's a lot more information there. And yeah, it's brand new stuff. So really exciting. Really, really exciting. The really sad part about what happens after prostatectomy is there's so much depression because, you know, okay, erectile dysfunction, that's going to cause a fair amount of depression to begin with. And incontinence problems where you have to worry about what's going to happen every time you go outside of your house. Yeah, this is a huge thing. So everybody listening that knows anybody that's having prostate problems, please ask them to look this up on the internet and educate themselves. Because if they can find someone nearby or if they can travel to a place where it's being done, then this is clearly a preferable path. This news article was actually a little video thing of a TV station. And I'm going to put the link in the Linkorama. And it's a guy who was fairly young. I think he was in his 40s. Who ended up getting prostate cancer, and he said his dad and I think his grandpa, I'm not really sure, or his uncles, he talks about it. They got prostate cancer, so he was a pretty good candidate for it. And when he got it, he thought there's got to be a different way. He did research. He found out about the HIFU. It was not allowed to be done in the United States at the time, so he went down to Dr. Suarez's clinic in Mexico 8 years ago and had it done. And the thing is it's so non-invasive. You're up and around doing nothing the next, or doing anything you want the next day, practically, right? And this is 8 years later, and he's had no recurrence. Here's another cool thing. If it recurs, you can do the same treatment over again. It's not like you're then relegated to having the massive surgery. So there you go. That's what I know. And I wanted to make sure everybody knew about it. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not giving advice. But if any of you people out there are looking for alternatives and wanting to educate yourself on the choices that you have and are faced with this decision, please know that this is one of the things that's available. And again, I'm going to put a bunch of links about the HIFU on the Linkorama and have a party. Check it out. Okay, another email. Greetings from the UK. I've been a long-term listener. Thank you for the fantastic service you provide to all your listeners. It's invaluable and we love you for it. Ooh, some love. I like getting love. I have a quick question about this podcast, and this was it wasn't an email, it was a comment left on podcast number 129, just this last one. You had an email from a gentleman who was using a WeVibe Tango in his prostate massager, and he seemed to make this work really well. I believe he sent you a link to the prostate massager he was using, but you never mentioned it by name in the podcast. Could you let us know what it was so your listeners can have as much fun as this guy seems to be having? Thank you, and keep up the excellent work. It's so funny, because, you know, I heard from that guy, and he said, you're such a tease. You, like, mentioned that there was this thing, and you never even put the link in there, so it's going to be interesting to see how many, you know, people write in and say, hey, so what was the damn toy, right? So, again, I am going to put another link in the Linkorama. This is going to be a very exciting Linkorama. This is from the Boys Shop, spelled B-O-Y-Z, boysshop.com. And it's called the Vibrating Silicone P-Spot Seeker. So I'm going to put a link to that. And yes, this is the toy that the guy's having the rolling orgasms with, right? So I'm going to put it up there. I want to hear from anybody who buys it, from UK guy. I want to hear from you. And you tell me how it works for you, because clearly this other guy's having a party with it. So sorry about that. I kind of just didn't do it. You know, I miss stuff sometimes. Thanks for calling me on it. And now it's up there. Okay, email. Ruby, hello. I hope this finds you doing well. I am one of your avid male readers, and yes, I am a Peggy / ass man. I am 48, and I have been enjoying anal play since my late teens, early 20s. I really enjoy your website and blog, Pegging Paradise. I like your approach, thoughtfulness, and insight to what is a very pleasurable sexual act. It's nice that you touch on so many subjects and aspects of ass play, especially strap-on and pegging. I first discovered ass play during solo play and masturbation. I have a good bit of experience being pegged, as I have been pegged by 4 different women. 2 of them were long-term relationships in which I was on the receiving end of a strap-on on many, many occasions. It's amazing to learn how many men and women alike are into the act. I'm especially intrigued by the number of women who are into bisexual men. I know you probably get a lot of emails and hear from a lot of people. I would love to share some of my experiences and stories and even share tips and advice. I hope to hear back from you soon. Have a great weekend. I would love to hear your stories and tips and advice. Add to the knowledge base and add to the story base. Absolutely. Anybody listening too that says, oh, I could write in about my thing, please do. This is what makes this program so rich, is all of the contributions that you people send in. So please do. And thanks for writing in. And yes, the thing about you're especially intrigued by the number of women who are into bisexual men. You know, I've always had a fascination for gay porn. Absolutely. Fair number of women do. But it wasn't until I kind of let loose with my sexuality and started diving into the whole pegging thing that I realized I really like bisexual men. And certainly one of my fantasies that has not happened yet, of course, if it does happen, you guys will be the second to know, other than the 2 men that I do it with, is to have a threesome with 2 men who are into each other, right? That's on my bucket list, right? So yeah. Anyway, my mind went off on the bisexual men thing. Yes, there's a fair number of women who are very interested in bisexual men. On my OkCupid profile, I actually literally put bisexual men welcome. I have that on my FetLife profile as well. So yes, love that. Totally love it. Okay, you distracted me. I think bisexual men are fucking hot. Okay, so let's move on here. I'm fanning my face. Let's move on here. Okay. So here's another comment, and this is regarding podcast number 129, when the guy recommended that his wife listen to podcast number 112, and her quote after she read it was, "You just chipped away at the block." Okay. So he wrote back, "The podcast where you read my letter was so much fun for my wife and I to listen to. Thank you for letting us know that you'd read the letter and for providing the link to the podcast. An update on my pegging progress. Getting closer. She recently penetrated me holding the dildo, but has not yet donned the harness. Fingers still crossed. You'll be the first to know if it happens. Well, after me, that is." Awesome. Okay. See, there's all of these almost ready to play the music things, you guys. Good luck to you. Thanks for checking in. Let us know when I can play the music. Okay, and we also heard back from the guy in podcast number 129 that basically said he's doing everything right. He's talked to her, he's done all the stuff. And I tried to give him some advice on how to move it forward a little bit and get her into pegging world. And here was his response. "Thank you so much for taking time to respond. I took a deep breath and sent her an email, and we have since discussed things a bit more. Do you have any suggestions for her in terms of a G-spot orgasm? You often compare prostate orgasms to G-spot orgasms. I do not believe she has ever had one, as she really gets off fast with clitoral stimulation and really likes it." Okay, here's my advice on that one. First of all, not all women like G-spot stimulation. Some do, some don't. And let me tell you my own personal story, because there may be women out there who are like me. I kind of fished around and thought, you know, I am really not finding G-spot anything here. I'm not impressed. I guess I don't have one. Maybe it's not true. Blah, blah, blah. I thought all these things, right? So I never pursued it. And then I had a boyfriend who was a sex geek, kind of, or just a geek, period. And he researched about how to do G-spot stimulation on the internet. And he brought those newfound educational skills to bed. And he introduced me to my G-spot, basically. And it was after we'd had a bunch of sex and we were kind of all laying around all relaxed. And so he kind of started things up again and started stimulating my G-spot. And using the skills that he had learned from some YouTube video and started stimulating it, and it felt really, really good. So I didn't even know that I could have that much pleasure there until he kind of introduced me to it, because he was really wanting to check it out and give me pleasure that way. So I suggest that you educate yourself by doing some research on the internet about exactly how to do G-spot massage, how to do G-spot stimulation, where it is, things like that. And then you two just have some fun and play in bed. Some women enjoy fingers. Some women enjoy vibrating toys. Some women just enjoy a toy, period. It could be that it's something she enjoys, and it could be something that she doesn't enjoy. At first, a lot of times what it feels like is you have to pee. So as long as you pee beforehand, then you know you don't have to pee. And you can just put towels underneath her so she can just totally relax, because that sensation of having to pee can really inhibit a lot of women to not relaxing. And the key to the whole thing is relaxing. So after giving you just this much information, I can tell you that I have never had what many women describe as a G-spot orgasm. However, I've had an orgasm that combines clitoral stimulation with G-spot stimulation, and it was fucking out of this world. I swear to God, it was unbelievable. So I really highly recommend exploration in that area. It does tend to be a spot that is something that kind of has to be woken up. Not for all women, but for some women. And this exact same thing can be said about men and their prostates. Sometimes you kind of have to wake the prostate up. So there is a great book called Female Ejaculation and the G-Spot, or maybe it's the other way around, the G-Spot and Female Ejaculation. It's written by Deborah Sundahl. Her last name is spelled Sundahl. Very good thing to read if you are getting into the whole checking out the G-Spot thing. And, you know, female ejaculation is awesome. Yeah, squirting, awesome stuff. So that's the information I have for you. I would highly suggest, though, researching it and checking it out and making it a fun thing with her to play with, to see if you can kind of discover, you know, what that's about. A lot of people, when they talk about G-spot stimulation, talk about putting the fingers in, you know, just past the opening a little ways and doing the come hither motion. Well, I took a class from Deborah Sundahl, actually. She came to Ventura. And one of the things that I learned was that that erectile, that pleasure tissue, if you will, that they label the G-spot, that when you put your fingers in that way that everybody describes about putting the two in and then the come hither thing, that's actually the back of the G-spot, and that tissue extends all the way from there all the way up just underneath the clitoris. So it's a whole different area to just play with and massage in a very relaxed manner, to just try and see what it feels like, you know. Put some lube on your fingers and just massage that. Run your fingers over it. See what she thinks. Have some fun with it and let us know how it goes. Okay, here's another email I got. This one is called Lubed Hand. Okay, here we go. I have what I consider a weird question. I only do solo play and never know what to do with my hand that I use to loop my ass and dildo and finger myself. The problem is that since my hand is lubed up, it is slippery, and I don't have a good grip on my toy. It's also bothering, since I cannot touch anything with this hand while trying to move or type anything on my keyboard. Sounds like you're watching porn at the same time. Since I have a suction cup dildo with a good suction, which is the Blush Ergo, awesome, I even struggle to move it. I tried to search online but could not find anyone with my little problem. May seem harmless, but I hate this part of anal masturbation so much I do it less and less, even though I love the feeling of my dildo penetrating me. I wonder if you could give me some tips on good ways to lube my ass and toys without having to handicap one hand for the session. All right, let me see if I got this straight. It sounds as if okay, you talk about you can't move anything or type anything on your keyboard. So it does sound like you are maybe sitting at a desk watching porn, maybe, is what I'm thinking. You have a good suction cup dildo, struggle to move it. So here is what I think I would suggest. Here, if I'm understanding your situation, because I'm trying to envision it, sitting at a desk, watching porn, playing with the suction cup dildo, and you have some kind of a chair that it can actually stick to fairly well, so that if you have it in the wrong place, it's a little difficult to move it because your fingers are all lubed up because you lubed up the toy, you lubed up, you know, fingering your ass and that kind of stuff. Here's what I think you should do. I think that you should put the toy on the chair before you start playing, and that you're opening up with your fingers and that kind of stuff should be done when you haven't sat down on the chair yet, and you can open yourself up, and it seems like an obvious solution. I'm not sure why this may not have been thought of by you, but a towel, you know, just a towel, that's really all you need. Because if you have a towel next to you, a hand towel or a bath towel or whatever you have, then it seems to me like after you do all of the playing and the lubing up and that kind of thing, you grab that towel after you've got that lovely dildo in your ass and you're sitting down and you can type on your keyboard all day long and fuck yourself for quite some time and not have to worry about it. And should you need to move the dildo since it's not in the exact right place, or since would you need to re-lube things if you've been going for a long time, you grab the towel and clean your hands off. Am I making this too simple? Because I don't know. I mean, the towel. I'm sorry if I got it wrong, so please tell me if I did and describe your situation in much more detail, but that does seem like the obvious solution to me. Or if anybody can tell by the way I read it that I completely misunderstood this guy, enlighten me, please. Because I don't mean to laugh at you, but towel, hello. All right, write me back and let me know if I got it right. I hope to hear that you have been having your own solo sessions much more often, because goodness knows, we all deserve as much pleasure as we can get in this life. So if you enjoy doing the solo play stuff, then more power to you, and let's figure this lubed hand thing out. And you know, I forgot to tell you, he signed it, "Thank you in advance, a guy craving to do it more often." Ooh, guy craving to do it more often, that's awesome. Okay, so here we go. This is actually a comment that was left on my forum, and I raised the subject of edging, and this guy wrote in again, and he had actually commented on a post that I had put up on my blog, and it was a short story about, a real life story about edging with a current guy that I'm having some fun with. And so here's what he says. "In my blog post, I mentioned that we're involved in a long-distance relationship. The longest I've been told to edge without coming has been 3 days, I think. As our crossover time of waking hours and availability is limited, orgasm control has allowed us to indirectly connect at other times. My girlfriend will tell me that I am allowed to edge until I'm just at the point of no return, then back off. At this point, there may be other instructions, such as to go and look at pics of her, or specific scenarios / fantasies to imagine. I then have to wait until my cock softens. From this point, I must wait at least an hour, and then I may edge again. This is a variation, not a rule. You mentioned the enthusiasm your guy has after a period of delayed gratification. I've been surprised at my own experience of this. I am craving my lady more than ever. Not purely her attention, but her. Partly this is due to the fact that arranging sexy times between two people on opposite sides of the earth, who both have busy day-to-day lives, is obviously difficult. In the past, it's been frustrating at times, especially with sexual needs being awkward to keep satisfied. From my point of view, my submitting to her control has negated that. We've embraced that frustration and now use it. We both know I may not touch without express permission. Touching also doesn't necessarily lead to release. Even when apart, there's a greater feeling of connection. My favorite moments have been when we managed to speak or message in real time, and in the middle of a typical conversation, I've been instructed to stroke. Obviously, I have obeyed, and the sudden rush of excitement is incredible. The flip side of this is when I am told whilst stroking to stop, combined with a don't you dare come. Again, I obey, and the aftershocks which rumble through my body aren't far from post-orgasmic quakes or flutters. I often feel my prostate buzzing intensely when the penile stimulation is suddenly stopped. When asked if I'd like to come, my honest answer is usually, if it would please you. Admittedly, we haven't explored beyond 3 days, so I'm sure my need for release would be more challenging over a greater period of time. But for now, I'm getting the most enjoyment simply by obeying my girlfriend. Whether I come or not, it's an incredible experience. I want to please her and hopefully arouse her. I look forward to reading others' thoughts and stories. I, for one, am loving this new and heady experience, and with the sound of my girlfriend's voice, I'm certain that she is too. Ooh, this edging thing is so damn sexy. So, for those who have not read it, you might want to check my blog, and I'll put a link in the Linkorama, and read the piece, 2 Weeks, I believe it's called. And this was describing an experience I had with the man in Chicago. So edging is taken, again, long distance, like you say, sir. Long distance has taken on a whole new fun aspect because edging can be so fun. And I know that during the day when he's following these rules that I've given him and these tasks to edge, that I do feel more connected to him because I know he's doing these things and then he reports into me. And the variations on this theme are quite extensive, just anything you can imagine to keep up with. Sometimes when I tell him to report into me, I tell him, do it in one sentence and I'd like to see some alliteration, right? Or give me 3 words, all alliterative, which means the first consonant is the same in all of them. Or sometimes I'll just say, tell me what you're feeling, and there's no restriction on how you report in. And he reports in when he's done, and yes, it's really quite fun. But I like the having to wait an hour before you edge again and bring yourself up to release. I'm liking that idea. That requires timing, more free time to yourself, I think. But I don't know. I'm wondering how you handle that because you have a job on the other end of the earth. And yes, I'm wondering how you manage that. Or does she tell you to do that on days that you are not working? I had a lot of fun reading this when it showed up on the forum, and I wanted to share it with all of you listeners because I know that there are a lot of fans of edging out there, and this was a juicy one, so I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for that comment on the forum, sir. Okay, I am looking at the time, and we have to go. I'm going to take my last couple of comments and messages and move them to a couple of podcasts down, since the next podcast, remember everybody, is going to be the cross-dressing one. So please send your stuff in as soon as you can to be included in that. I would absolutely love it. And let's see, if you go to my website and you look on the bottom left-hand side, you can sign up to know whenever there is something new on my blog. There's also links where you can follow me on Twitter and on Facebook, and you guys are just liking the hell out of my Facebook page. It's totally awesome. Thank you so much. And let's see, if you are listening to this podcast for the very first time and you're kind of wondering what's the best way to access it, there's a whole bunch of different places to access it, podcast downloader apps. I just recently signed up with Stitcher as well. You kind of have to go and apply to them and say, okay, please carry my podcast. So if any of you have a particular podcast app that you really like using and you can't find me on it, and you're having to go to my website and listen to it directly, because that's another option, is it streams directly from my website, please write me and let me know, because it's a simple matter for me just to say, please carry my website. If I fill out the proper information and they put it up. So yeah, please do that for me if you will. And of course it is available also on Evil iTunes. Okay, what else? If you're sending stuff in, or if you want to call in, send the stuff to ruby@peggingparadise.com and call in to 805-500-6544 and just send all that stuff in. You cross-dressers out there, I really want to hear from you. I want to hear about what you like about it, what you don't like about it, what thrills you, how it is in your life, all of those things that I've already talked about. So here we are at the end of another podcast. Thank you all for downloading and listening. You're the best. And always, happy pegging.
Mm-hmm.